Welcome back to the wide world of wargaming. This is Alex with John, Matthew, and Jeremy. Today we'll be talking about a couple of events that happened this last weekend, specifically the Your Mom's RTT and the Riptide GT in the Pacific Northwest. John, how are you doing today, and what's on your workbench?
Hey, I'm doing great, Alex. Good to talk with you, man. Hey, it's kind of late on a Tuesday. We're recording here, so I thought I'd relax with something a little bit lighter, a little St. George's single malt whiskey, and you can hear it nicely sloshing around my glass there. It'll be sloshing around my mouth very soon. And, you know, as we'll be talking about the tournament this in a few minutes, I'm not going to get into it right now, but in preparation for that tournament, I went ahead and built the Warp Gnaw Vermin Lord that I picked up a couple years ago at the Nova Open. He's just been kind of sitting in my to-be-built pile. So I built him up, did a nice custom base with him. I haven't got any primer on him yet, but man, what a gorgeous Forge World model. It was just an absolute pleasure to put that thing together. A little bit of mold lines, but not too bad to clean up. So I brought him along this weekend, hoping to roll the magic 12 and summon him. And unfortunately for me, that was not to happen. So anyways, we'll get him painted up and on the table. Other than that, I got a nice game in. I didn't play my Scryer this weekend, so I did play a game against Michael Birch, who ran the tournament from Your Mom's Garage Gaming team. I played my Skaven Scryer list against his nasty Flesh Eater Quartz, and it was nice. I did an awesome 54 mortal wounds against a Terrorgeist in two rounds of shooting, and then he hit my lines and killed almost my entire army. So with three wounds left and healing every turn, it was pretty brutal. So that was kind of how my week went. How about you, Jeremy? What have you been up to, my friend?
I'm drinking some lovely Talisker. So I'm enjoying some scotch again, because I think the last few episodes I've been keeping it sober, which is an unfortunate problem. So now we fixed it. We rectified it. Now I just came back from Riptide, ripped my Fire Slayers, and I'm working on giving them a better quality paint job. You know, doing some more highlights, doing some more shading, getting some more base work done. So when I come down to BAO, they'll be a lot cleaner looking than they were at Riptide. So I'm hoping that will come through well for best overall next time. How about you, Matt? What do you? What's on your workbench? What you drinking? Is it PBR?
It is not. I'm drinking a nice vintage year emergency, because we have three children, so I kind of survive on this stuff to not be constantly sick. And I am working on an Arena Rex commission. Not that we are an Arena Rex podcast, but quick note: I've never seen these models before in person. They are beautiful models, like super cool models. It's like a Roman Empire era arena fighting game. Super cool models. And then working on a bunch of Skaven rats as well for our good friend Kyle. So that's me.
Past
yeah. Alex, what do you got going on?
Well, I'm keeping it a little sober Sally tonight too. I got myself a little iced coffee just to recharge and re-energize tonight. In terms of building anything, I'm not building anything. I got nothing to paint, nothing to build. I could paint a Dreadblade Harridan or a Cogs, but besides that, nothing hobby wise, at least not for the foreseeable future.
Displayboard.
Just because, you know, displayboard. Yeah, that'll probably be something I'll need to work on. Now, I don't have a easy bake oven to try to put lights into, you know, being one of the few newer armies that doesn't have a scenery mechanic, but you're going to have to think a little bit about that scenery. I think that Shadow Realm scenery, those new ruins, are just like screaming like display board for me.
Yeah. Those Egyptian style ruins they previewed.
Oh yeah.
Those look super.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Those are nice.
We'll get you a Celestine Prime and then a Lady O, and you can have them duking it out on the fucking table.
There you go. And whatever's in that background, where it's like, I think it's Heinrich, but who knows?
Or they can be ballroom dancing. Your choice.
That sounds like some Tumblr fanfic. I don't know if we're ready for that. Yeah.
Call 4chan. Call them. they'll dry for you.
yikes. But there were, as mentioned at the start of this recording today, there were a couple of events that happened this weekend, one of which was an RTT, and John did mention just a little bit of how he did at that event with Skaven. John, can you tell us a little bit more about the event you went to, the people who ran it, and how it went for you in particular?
Sure, not a problem. So this weekend I went to the Your Mom's AOS tournament at Game Castle up in Mountain View, and this was ran by a good friend, Michael Birch, of Your Mom's Garage, which is another local competitive team here in the Bay Area. They've done very well and overall in the ITC. Of course, guys, they travel to all the big tournaments and all that good stuff. So a good group of guys there. Anyway, Mike and I were talking, earlier about a month ago about the need to get some more tournaments going in the Bay Area. He said he wanted to run one. I happened to have a date reserved at Game Castle. Offered it to him. So he went ahead and took this Sunday to run the tournament. So all came out good. Anyways, the tournament itself was pretty standard stuff for the Bay Area here. Mike went ahead and used the same self-score sportsmanship rubric that I brought in. He did roll for the missions each round. He did roll for the realm and realmscape abilities that we played with each round. So that was particularly fun. So the three rounds were the Battle for the Pass, which was in Chamon, the metal realm. Then round two, we played Star Strike, which is Aquashi. And round three was Total Commitment. I myself brought my Skaven along, no surprise. And though I had been considering running my Scryer for the weekend, bring them out. The way that they got pretty much smeared by Mike's Flesh Eater Quartz when we played a practice game during the week meant that Scryer is sitting on the shelf, at least for this weekend. And I figured my best chance was to just flood the board with bodies. So I just went with a Skaven Tide list. I had the Vermin Lord Warp Seer as my general. No surprise. His trait was the Master of Magic for +1 casting and the Suspicious Stone for the second 5-up Feel No Pain. Then I also had the Plague Priest on the Plague Furnace. I had the Gray Seer on the Screaming Bell. And then I had, the Vermin Lord Corruptor. So four big guys up in front. Then I had a block of 40 clan rats, and then another block of 40 clan rats, then 20 clan rats, so a total of a nice 100 clan rats running around on the table. In addition, I threw down 80 plague monks, so the whole list had, I think it was 230 wounds that somebody would have to chew through. I also started off with an extra command point and the Bell of Doom. Wish that I had brought some more endless spells, but I went with what I went. And I will say I was lucky enough to draw Michael Birch once again in the first round with his Flesh Eater Quartz. And of course, he's running a pretty good list. Now, Mike is no newbie to playing death, so he's been playing some pretty strong death lists for a while now. And always has the ability to kind of put together clever, potent lists. And he certainly did that this weekend. So his list starts off with two Aberrant Archregents. And then he has two Aberrant Ghoul Kings on the Royal Terrorgeist. Now, one of them is his gen... I'm sorry,
John,
what's that?
It is also important to note for our listeners here that Michael did win the Broadside Bash ITC event in Southern California just last month.
Oh yeah, thanks for mentioning that. That's right. Again, Michael is definitely a top quality player. Knows his business, yeah. Right? And anyways, his general had the Griff Feather Charm, Gruesome Bits, Blood Feast, general with the Savage Strike, all the stuff you would expect because, of course, he was running Gristle Gore. Beyond that, he brought the Ghoul Patrol Battalion with his Crypt Brat Gas Courtier and 30 Crypt Ghouls, three blocks of 10. And that was it for his list. He all came in at 1890 points. So he was rocking two extra command points from running his list short, plus an extra one from his battalion. So he was starting off with 3 command points. And, well, we played that first round in the realm of metal, and he rolled the Realmscape ability, and it was the one where you pick an enemy unit each turn, and on a 6, you roll a dice for every unit or every model in the unit, and if it is less than their armor save, you remove the model. And, of course, my Plague Monks have an armor save of dash.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, you know, I knew it was going to be ugly for me from the get, right? And Mike, if you've ever played him, he makes those 5-up feel no pains like they are going out of style. So I knew that he would be hitting a few 6s on me, too.
Can I ask you something?
Sure.
Been FAQ'd? Because there are several FAQs that say a characteristic of dash does not mean more than 6.
Oh, no, you're right. The dash does count as 6 for the purposes of this realm ability.
Okay.
So, you know, there was that chance if I rolled a few 6s that I would save a few Plague Monks. A chance. So with his battalion, Mike did go ahead and get the top of the turn. And we're playing, you know, the Battle for the Pass. It was the Long Ways table. And, you know, it's sometimes you get beaten. Sometimes you're on your back foot. And I knew it was going to be a challenging game. But I also really knew that I needed to deploy on the back line and not let him charge me unbuffed. And, of course, what did I do? I set up right on the line. And so Mike got the, you know, rolled the 6 in the hero phase. Picked up 35 Plague Monks in one of my units, so that was pretty brutal. That was a big chunk of my screen. And then he sent his nasty Terror Geist forward. He charged in, of course, gets to strike first and then spend a command point and pile in and strike first again. All the good stuff. You know, getting extra hits on 6s, doing mortal wounds. I think it was with a roll of a 6 on the chomp or something like that. I forget. All I know is that I was picking up big old characters, picking up models like they were going out of style. Needless to say, it was pretty brutal. Now, it wasn't an out-and-out zero game for me. You know, I did, in fact, cause a bunch of wounds to the Terror Geist that it then just healed. So that went down. Anyways, Mike, great player. I did score a few points. He did get the major win on me. I was basically tabled by the top of turn 3. I was happy to have a couple models left. We just called it at that point. And that was that. That was kind of the big brutal opening of my eyes this week, having played against the Flesh Eater Courts now twice in a row. Albeit the same guy, but he did bring 2 different lists in each of our different games. So that was pretty gnarly. Now, my other 2 games, also against, you know, great guys, great players. I played round 2 was a guy by the name of Michael Tempe, which if you guys listen to 40K podcasts, he's on one called The High Lords of Terra, which is, again, a competitive centric podcast centered here in the Bay Area. And Michael has been messaging me saying he's real interested in playing Age of Sigmar. So he asked if he could borrow one of my armies. And I said, hey, well, I have 2 armies you can borrow. You can borrow my Eidneth Deepkin, or you can borrow my Stormcast Eternals. He picked the Stormcast Eternals and asked me to make a list for him. Well, I'll be honest, I didn't even know what Stormcast Eternals I owned. So first I put together a list of everything I owned. Then I removed a bunch of stuff. Until I had a bunch of casters, like the same caster on every different mount, and some battle line, and some artillery, and that was it, because I'll be honest with you, I don't really have a lot of Stormcast Eternals to make any kind of decent list. So Michael told me for a couple rounds in a row that the list had no synergy, and then when he and I played, it was pretty ugly too. So that was a fun game. It was good to get Michael into the hobby. But other than that, not much happening. My third round was against Alex Ramirez, another local guy. Of course, you may have met him, SoCal, all the places that people travel to. He was also playing Stormcast Eternals. He had a great list. He had a Sequitur Bomb, all that good stuff. But he couldn't chew through my rat, so I won that game as well. So all in all, I went 2-1 at the tournament and took third place, which for the Your Mom's Garage tournament means that I actually got the Little Rascal placing. So it was all pretty fun. So that was my weekend. Jeremy, I hear on the grapevine that you might have done pretty well this weekend as well. What happened for you?
Oh, I don't know if third counts as pretty well, but I guess John...
I got third, so that probably counts as pretty well.
Jeez, Jeremy.
Yeah, well, hey, real quick. I want to give a bit of an intro to the event. The event John's talking about in particular is the Riptide GT. It was hosted by our friend Andrew in the Pacific Northwest. He's part of Team Victoria's Secret. It was at, I'm going to butcher this, it was at Blue... Well, it was in Bremerton, Washington, but it was at Blue Sky Hobbies.
Blue Skies Hobbies Wizard Gaming, I think, or something.
Blue Sky Hobbies Wizard Gaming. It is a fantastic store. They have a great bar, cool menu as a part of the store, much like other type of game stores in the Pacific Northwest. It was at in Bremerton, Washington, so it was just in the area of the Puget Sound region, and we all did pretty good. Before we go into some breakdowns here, I do want to let everyone know that three of your hosts today, myself, Matthew, and Jeremy, we all did pretty well. Jeremy did get third place at this GT event. I myself got second place, and Matthew won it all. He got first place at this tournament. Now, going back to the discussion with Jeremy, how did your tournament experience go?
I got a couple of things to say first. First, dog. Fuck you for bringing Suspicious Stone to the fucking warps here.
Hey,
I mean, curiously, how many wounds did that guy tank on average every game?
After a couple rounds of tanking, most people just gave up on killing him. But Michael was able to bring him down, of course.
And the follow-on is, I wish we had the ability for me to play like a submarine, like a breach sound, because Mr. Alex and our host here got second after breaching the waves of submarining the entire weekend. So I'm very proud of you. You've not. I usually have the title of submariner, and I'm glad I can pass it on to you. I had a great time. I don't want to go too much into my game specifically, because I think like Matthew's take on this and Alex's take on this is way more interesting. I do want to point out two armies, and then I think me and Matthew will go like a back and forth in our game, because that was the deciding game for me if I was going to be able to get first or not during the event. I played against Amendus War, who brought a Skaven list, but a very unusual Skaven list. She brought a Clan Molder list with three Hellbomb and Abomination and their battalion, and like two units of 40
rat swarms, right? Giant rat
swarms. And it was, rat swarms or giant rats.
Yeah, they were sure giant rats. I played her too. It was unexpected.
That sounds like a fun list.
I did not realize how hard Hellbomb Abominations hit until I played, until I basically got up to the table and read what they did. And I was like, holy God, these things are terrifying on the table. And for the most part, they're not very tanky, but if you can get that charge off against a unit that's very volume heavy model count, they can do some work. Even against any other unit that's not a very heavy, like, they hit hard as long as they're not, like, too reduced in wounds effectively. Unfortunately, like, if I had played the lodge that was the extra speed for my Fire Slayers, which is the Vostarg Lodge, I probably would have lost my Vostarg Hearthguard unit just literally on the charge of two Hellbomb Abomination. Because she would have been able to do almost, like, 60 mortal wounds to the unit before they got to swing. Which is like, I mean, granted, like, yeah, they reduce it on a 4-up, which means that it would have been 30 mortal wounds, but I would have been half the unit. And then one Hellbomb activating before me would have did at least another like 15, 20 mortal wounds, or not 20 mortal wounds, sorry, damage. Like, they were terrifying.
Yeah.
But I played Hermdar, which meant I had the ability to strike before they got to swing. And we, you know, basically I was able to reduce their bracket down a couple peg, one to the bottom and the other one to like near the bottom. So the mortal trigger wasn't on a two up. It was on like a five up and a four up, which greatly reduced the effectiveness of those things. But hell, if you didn't have those, like as a mechanic, like you would have been, it would not have been pretty. Anyway, really enjoyable game. I just also like respawning rat ogres and, you know, the rats over and over. I think I killed one rat unit like five times during
the
game. Like five consecutive times they kept. And the thing is, like, they don't respawn, like, they don't, she doesn't have to respawn them, like, where they die. Like, they kept, like, two units of my herd guards literally got to fight the same unit of respawning rats twice across the different corners of the table. Like, they would die, they would respawn the other edge of the table, and then charge the other herd guard berserkers. Because she wasn't playing on killing them at that point, she was just playing on stealing the objective back from me, just model count, and it worked great. Like, she unfortunately did not win the game, mostly because of the mission design. Like, she could not contest my home objectives at all after the hell bombs died. But, you know, that was like I think there's something there.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Clan Molder, there's something there.
Oh, yeah. I think there is definitely some potential for that, like you saw with the respawning rats. And that's kind of one of my dreams has always been to run a big old giant swarm of those guys. It would be so fun. So I thought that was a pretty cool list.
You know, I fought against that as well. And those three hell pit abominations, I think that there's definitely something there. They do hit like a brick shit house with those mortal wounds. But, you know, when they're degraded, it does get a little tricky for the person. But the cool thing is at the start of the game, because she had that battalion, I don't know which one it was, but it allowed her to get D3 extra wounds on.
Oh, no, that's not even a battalion. That's just the
master molders.
They have like this ability, they're called prized possession, where they basically like pick a Hellbomb abomination. They're like, you're my most prized possession. And they get an extra D3 win to start the game. And then if one of them is a general, it's like either an automatic 3 wounds extra or D6 wounds extra. So you have to choose like kind of like what you want to do with that. And I don't think that's from the battalion. I think that's just literally like the clan molder.
I think you're right.
Ability.
Because she.
I'm not even 100% sure what the battalion did in that game.
I think they were the ones that brought the units back, the two units of 40. It was the
yeah, it makes it on a 4+ instead of a 5+ is basically what's going on there.
Yeah, she never filled a single one of those roles. And then she had the relic from Ish that would basically respawn CPs on a 5+. And I think like on about half of the roles, she got the CP back. So I was just oh, cool, this is fun. I'm killing the same. I was just picturing my fire slayers like literally screaming insults at each other across the table, because every time they would kill one of them would kill the unit of rats, they would spawn in the other side, and they're just tired of beating up the same.
I could think of Gimli and seeing like one Hearthguard kill one of the Hell Pit abominations and be like, it still counts as one.
Yeah, the big problem with those hell pits is usually that they move 2d6, so it's getting them across the board is kind of their Achilles heel.
It's not too bad, because I'm a slow, stouty dwarf and I take center field, so she doesn't really have much of a downside into that. Like, at least against my army, she can just she should be able to get the first, unless I get a double turn or something. She should be able to get the charge off on me, and she did. Unfortunately, it didn't work out as well as she was like. I mean, just because of the always strike first mechanic.
Stupid. The word you're looking for.
We'll talk about later.
So brutal. Yeah. Well, that, and again, that's, you know, it's when you got a 2d6 move, that's either, you know, the fastest army in the world or it's the slowest army in the world. Apparently for her, it's, you know, the favor of the great horned rat to get around. With me, that's, you know, 3 inches a turn.
Boom.
You know, you can do a lot of 3 inches. I move 4.
But
so.
Seriously, you can.
So how'd the rest of your games go?
I do want to talk about a little bit briefly about the Gristle Gore list I played. So that was the first, you know, okay. Matthew's game was the first, the first experience I was going to have to see if the Morsar unit could deal with the Hearthguard unit. And obviously we'll talk later about the game, so I'm going to skip over that. But then the second game I played, that was like the first true test of how broken this unit was against the Gristle Gore army. In the game, he dedicated his Terrorgas, you know, Savage Strike, Activate First, all that stuff, into 10 Hearthguards on my flank, killed 9 of them with double activation. Granted, they were in cover. Not that that makes a real difference, because he did, like, most of the damage was from the mortal wounds. He also, caveat, had an extra 3 attacks for all of his attacks, because that's what the spell he when he rolled the spell, that's what he got. So he was, like, fully damaged that, and also had his 5-up shrug. Comes in, kills 9 guys. I do no damage back. Oh, he also kills a Grimwrath Berserker that I think did, like, that's not true. I did 7 wounds to it, but then he healed, like, most of it back from the chalice. So, cool, whatever. Next combat, when it's my turn, I bring in only, not my full 30-man unit into the Terror Guys. I bring only, like I think it was, like, 10 models into it. You know, 12 models into it. And the rest was basically got a, like, a multi-charge into the rest of his army. The first round of combat, I did something like 18 mortal wounds to it. Sorry, first activation for the unit. 18 mortal wounds to it. This is before it gets to strike first, because I have the ability to strike first myself. 18 mortal wounds and something like 22 regular wounds to it. It survived with 3 wounds. So then it got to attack back into me and did something like 60 damage overall, like the double activation it has, the mortal wounds and so forth, did 60 damage. It killed literally about only like 12 of my Hearthguards. And then I got to activate again and just nuke the rest of it, right? And what? And when the initiative roll went off, I ended up getting a double turn because I was blessed by the Fire Slayer, Grimnir God, and then just nuked his other like big monster, which he actually ran a zombie dragon over a Terror Geist for the second monster, but that unit just flung back, you know.
This is your last game of the tournament, right? Correct?
Yeah. And he just nuked it off the table. At that point, the game was pretty much over. He had lost not only like his entire ghoul patrol battalion from the multi-charge from the first turn I had, but he also lost all of the Vargolf and Crypt Flayers that he summoned from just 10 Hearthguard Berserkers with the broad axes. And at that point, like, all he had left was just, like, his Arc Regen.
Well, this is also pretty quick. This is all, like, in the span of 1 hour.
Yeah, this is the first 2 turns, effectively. He had a plan because the table we played on was ridiculous in terms of terrain. Like, literally, the terrain pieces on the table covered, like, something like 70% of the table. And he was planning on blockading with some endless spells the ability of, like, because of the terrain pieces, for my army to move forward and claim the center objective. But I was not being cheeky. There was literally a gap in, like, a bunch of tree line that was, like, 32 mil exactly that he didn't plug. And I was able to Congo line the Hearthguard Berserker unit through that tree gap and, like, multi-charge his entire, like, Gold Patrol battalion that was sitting on the center objective that he was trying to blockade me from getting onto. So, you know, the game was like, I even told him after the game, like, look, like, if you just literally did not commit to the field on turn one and just basically prevented me from, like, scoring points, there was no pressure for you to try to nuke my army until, like, late half the game. Like, and I hope that's a lesson he takes away from the next games he plays against Fire Slayers. It's like, there is absolutely no reason for you to try to, like, nuke Fire Slayers, because you're not going to. Even the, like, the most damaging unit in the game is, like, hitting that block, it's not going to do enough damage to remove it off the table. So that's the highlight of the tournament. I do want to say, though, the Witherstaff relic from Clan is one of the best solution to my army. Mostly because it makes me reroll all my successful 6s to hit, which really neuters the mortal wound output for my pull arms. But, you know, Carrie, where I played, plays Maggotkin, does a very, like, heavy defensive build, and then started taking, like, Plague Monks as, like, her ability to punch back. But anyway, Witherstaff.
It's such a good relic in general, because so many armies have abilities that activate on 6s to hit.
Yeah, it's I don't understand why more people, like, yeah, if I see
especially
a
on
player,
like a big character that you want to survive, yeah, like, it's super good. So,
well, there's so many different there are so many different armies out there now that have unmodified sixes do something, you know, do two extra attacks or do mortal wounds or something different. So yeah, this is that's huge.
Even against Gristlegore, like it makes them reroll their first wave of attacks like on sixes, and that's how the Terrorgast does in mortal wounds. Like, it's a very good relic, and I wish it was a relic that was available for more armies. Like, I wish it was a realm relic. I wish there was.
Oh, dude, if it was a realm relic, real quick, oh my too, lord.
I know it doesn't sound like super amazing just saying you have to reroll your sixes to hit, because a lot of, like, rerolling hits, you usually, depending on if you hit on threes or fours or whatever, it's going to cut down your efficiency by like 50%, right? But rerolling sixes specifically, if you have an ability that triggers on a six, you're negating 83% of those sixes. So if you roll six natural sixes and have to reroll all of them, math says you only convert one out of them. So you block 80, whatever that is, 83 or 84% of the that ability that triggers on a six.
Yeah. I literally hope they add more of relics like this or spells like this to the game. I didn't see that happening in the Hedonite book, but I really hope the Sylvaneth book has like access to that, basically. Anyway.
Hey, how does that work relative to your own rerolls? Let's say you reroll your hits, but you actually make successful sixes, so you don't use your reroll to hit. Then you have to reroll that six. Now it's a miss.
Yeah.
Do you then reroll it again? No.
Nope.
So then, okay, if you can't reroll a reroll, now I reroll and miss. Then I reroll and get a six. That's a reroll. But then I reroll that reroll again.
Nope.
No. Pretty much whoever reroll takes precedence. That's it.
Interesting. That is a weird little mechanic. So my rerolls, when they get sixes, they themselves don't have to be rerolled.
Right. Let's give an example. Like, I get 20 hits and 10 misses. My 20 hits, I have two sixes. And on my 10 misses, I reroll those and I get an extra six. That extra six I reroll from the misses does not get penalized. It doesn't have to be rerolled. But the two sixes I got on the initial roll from the original hits, I have to reroll those because of the relic.
Wow. Okay. That's interesting. Very powerful.
Yeah. It literally shuts down mechanics that happen on
sixes. It is great.
How did your Riptide event go, Mr. Winner Chicken Dinner?
Well, hold on. Whoa. Why are we skipping second place?
Because you're last in the talking. Because
we submarine.
You can go first. Edit.
Well, I thought we might have you as the piece de resistance, sir.
Okay, well, you can go last, but I only want one thing, Alex. You have to say the entire recap and really bad Russian accent.
Oh, no, there's no way I can pull that off. But I will say that since we're recording right now, it would be very important in post for a certain someone, a certain Vincent Morgado, to add some sort of, you know, submarine music.
Like some red noise? Like that.
Exactly. Or maybe like, I don't know, some...
A sonar beat?
The theme from Red October, if anyone would even get it.
Chief of the Watch, on the 1MC, dive.
Yeah, but, you know, when it comes to the tournament, I do... It is all bitch-assness. I definitely want to, you know, finalize everything with, you know, Matt talking about his experience, especially your game with Matthew, Jeremy. When we do take a look at my own experience, I thankfully submarined it, or I guess not thankfully submarined it, but, you know, I didn't have to, play either of you, or our buddy Kyle. So that was, strange. Normally I always get paired up with someone eventually that I know well. But yeah, it was, submarined. I lost round one to Chris M, the individual that Matthew beat for all the marbles, and he had his Tzeentch list, his Tzeentch Arcanite list. He had the Keeper of Secrets with the command ability where, you know, they can be plus one to cast an Unbind, and it was one of those situations where you rolled two dice and you were able to pick the highest of the two and double that. And he, out of every, two dice, he rolled every single one of his dice, pair rolled, or almost every single one. There was a six for every cast, for every Unbind. There was a six somewhere. So he was basically casting and unbinding on 13s, which essentially shut down my entire army. But, you know, after that, I played a great game against Daniel Cooper, a Korn player.
Whoa. Let's hold up there. Yes, his magic is very powerful, but you forgot to mention the Zangor Coven, like literally the hardest hitting, like Disciples of Zeech mechanic.
The hotness. Yeah, he did bring the Zangor Coven. For me, it was more about mitigating. So, like, you know, I just threw a Reaper unit into the Zangor Coven, and just over time they would get whittled away. But the Zangor Coven wasn't as big in my game as it was just him completely shutting down all my buffs and me not being able to shut down any of his whatsoever.
No, I just want to bring that up because, like, literally that battalion can carry you to the finish line in a lot of games.
Yeah.
Just in case anyone's wondering, the Zangor Coven is the battalion that allows you to activate your Zangor unit in the hero phase to pile in an attack.
Yeah. That did hurt.
So in a roundabout way, hurt. They get a double activation.
Yep. After that, played a great game against Korn. I also played round three, Amanda Zwar, the individual that, Jeremy, you played with the million regenerating rats. Round four, I played against our friend Cody in Central Oregon. He was one of two Flesh Eater Court players that didn't have, he didn't run Gristlegore, but he did bring the Ghoul King on Terrorgeist. I honestly forgot which delusion he brought, because I don't believe he brought a Grand Court. What's up?
He brought
Feasting Day.
It's the auto-activate Feeding Frenzy once per turn.
Okay. Yeah, that one was – it was good. I got lucky. There were a few times where he just, like, his rolls were relatively bad with the jaws of the Terrorgeist. But it also came down to, you know, deployment very much more than anything else. But after that, I played one final game against the Sylvaneth list. It's basically the exact same Sylvaneth list that we're all very familiar with, knowing our friend Kyle, with a Tree Master or a Tree Lord Ancient, Alariel, Kurnoth Hunters, unit of sprites, essentially. And, it's one of those things where we've played it enough times where, you know, the ins and outs and the tricks are all, very readily, understood, known. And that was my final game and my overall experience submarining to the top. But I did want to definitely touch base and see how Matthew did.
It's my turn now. I'm allowed to go.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no.
That's right. So give us really the meat and potatoes, what everyone's been waiting
drive
for,
over
man.
The Portland or the Seattle area and kind of see the guys that are all over there. I woke up very early Saturday morning at about 3 a.m. and drove over, said hi to everybody. We kind of jumped right in. Round one, I played a Sylvaneth player, it was a Nighthaunt player, actually. He was kind of newer to the game. He was running kind of like a mixed Nighthaunt list. He had some big Chain Rasp units. A big Dread Scythe Herodin block. It just kind of some random stuff. It was the Blood and Glory mission, so it's a pretty good mission for me because I run a couple big units of eels, so I'm mobile. I can hit pretty hard, and I can hold my own objectives. So that game ended pretty quick. I tabled him top of three. Game two, I played. Who did I play game two? I'm trying to. Oh, a guy named, yeah.
Well, while you remember that, I want to point out, you beat him.
Well,
not just
yeah,
the top of three,
I mean, I,
but literally,
I beat him
like, in the first
top
40
of
minutes
one,
of
probably.
The round.
I took like 70% of his army off the table, top of one. But yeah,
I was literally watching your game next to you. Like, I was sitting next to you, and I complete my first turn and look back to see, because you guys are just at finished deployment. Look back to see how your first game.
Yeah, kind of like turn I walked like through everything, kind of the army was going to do, like, and kind of talked about his stuff, how he should screen, and we had a good chat, and then he clump deployed everything on his front line, which was not exactly what I was hoping he would do. So I put all of my eels into it and took it off the table. Game two, I played against that Sylvaneth list that Alex mentioned earlier. It's pretty similar to one that our friend Kyle runs, so kind of know how it works. That was the three places of power mission. He actually has some big heroes. He had an Alarial and a Tree Lord Ancient, so I was a little nervous because that's one of my weaker missions. All three of my heroes, I have two Soul Scryers and one Tidecaster. They're not very beefy heroes. I run an artifact and a command trait on two different ones to help them be a little more survivable, but they don't stand up in a fight super well. I was able to grab one objective for myself and then just kill him off the second two objectives during turn two. So he only ever scored 2 points, and then I scored my corner objective all five turns. We actually only got to four, and I tabled him there. And then round three, I'll actually come back to, because that's the game with Jeremy. We'll hit that at the end and kind of go through our viewpoints of that. Round four was Total Commitment. I played against actually probably one of my kind of favorite lists, Jack Ballard. Super cool dude. One of my favorites from that area. He was playing a Shooting Stormcast list. I don't remember exactly everything that was in it, but I know it was the Hellstorm Battery Battalion, and then he had 9 Vanguard Raptors and 3 Celestar Ballistas, and then some dudes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I played against him with that same one at the Rose City Wrath. There's a lot of nasty shooting there.
It's pretty brutal. I was kind of able to get him to him pretty quick and tie up some of the shooting. Deepkin have that rule where you can only target the closest Idoneth Deepkin unit for shooting. So I was kind of able to funnel a lot of his shooting just into the unit that I wanted it to go into. So that game, it was... the first kind of two turns were a little bit tense, but after his, well, like turn and a half, as soon as his screen folded, I picked up the rest of his army turn three. The first two were pretty grindy, and then turn three was just kind of scooping models. But super fun game. I love playing against Jack. And then round five, I played against that Tzeentch list that again was already mentioned. It's a 30 block of Zangor, 9 Enlightened. I think he had a 3-man unit of Skyfires, either 3 or 6. Okay. I think they're part of that battalion.
Did.
Yeah. And then he
did.
Had a couple units of Kerrick Acolytes to screen. And again, this mission was kind of a bummer actually. Because he actually way out drops me and then gave me first turn. He kind of deployed interesting. I didn't expect him. He put his entire army on the line. He used his Kerrick Acolytes to screen his backfield, but I didn't put anything into reserve to deep strike, so it was kind of surprising. He deployed all 30 of his Zangor and all 9 of his Enlightened on the line and then gave me first.
No.
So I was able to move both my units of eels up, take all 9 Enlightened, and I think 24 or 25 of the Zangor off in my turn, and then he went killed like I don't know, 3 or 4 eels, and I killed the rest of that Zangor block immediately, and then we rolled priority for turn two. I won, so I took the turn and tabled the rest of his army.
I do want to point out that, like, so I know you think it's a common, you know, event, Matthew, because you know, like, you realize your opponent's army can't really get to your eels usually in the first turn. But most players who play against Deepkin or have any experience against Deepkin are usually players who just face Deepkin players who just put the eels in, like, the reserve mechanic, basically. But like the thing is, like with the double Soulscryer and the fact that there are ability stacks, which means you can get a plus 6-inch charge to a specific target for your eels, and the 14-inch movement and turn 2 run and charge mechanic, like you don't actually have to go in reserve.
Yeah, so yeah. Like, and that's it catches a lot of people off guard. Over that 5-game tournament, I put one unit in reserve my very first game, and that was it.
Yeah. That's interesting. You know, when I played him, he deployed super defensive, you know, screened with the Acolytes, with the Zangor herd, made sure that there was no way I was going to touch his Enlightened or his Skyfires round one. So I'm curious about putting it all in
his
front,
list
especially
was only
in such a closer
six
mission.
Or seven drops, I think, and mine is 10. So I was able to just deploy everything but the eels, and then as soon as he was all dropped, I just stuck them where I wanted them because he was kind of forced to screen from the table edges because he didn't know if I was going to come in from there or not, and then I didn't. It was kind of...
That's an advantage of having more units
that
people don't often think of, too.
Obviously, having first turn choice can be really good, but having an army that can keep your... Since I can null deploy my important stuff off the table if I need to, I kind of almost prefer having so many more drops than people and making them put their entire army down and then deploying my stuff where I want it counter to that.
Agreed.
I mean, sometimes I would prefer to have the choice for turn, but I would say probably 3 out of 4 games, I kind of like being able to have those extra 2 or 3 drops at the end and just hold my important stuff until then.
Yeah.
And then, Jeremy, if we can kind of just quick run down our game, I'll give like a quick rundown from my side, I guess, and then you can do the same from yours and clear up anything if I get it wrong.
That'd be great.
Well, it's easy. You played the game perfectly.
We played the Star Strike mission. We both kind of we deployed everything on the line. Jeremy took first turn. He moved 2 of his units up, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 inches up the table. He gave me first turn. My bad. I moved my units like a couple inches up the table. Mostly just keeping my front battle line all exactly the same as it was. I moved my Reavers just into range. Took a couple shots. I think I put like 1 or 2 wounds on a Berserker, and that was it. And then gave him the turn. So his turn one, he moved his army, same thing, probably 6 inches up the table. And then it was time for priority. Nothing had really happened. So we roll priority, he wins priority, and the objective came down. Let me think. It came down to his left, my right, and it's the side that he had kind of cheated, his units off of. So he had a unit to deep strike on that objective, but he had chosen to move his army to the other side of the table, kind of banking on it coming down on one of those two objectives. So that forced him to deep strike his third unit onto the side that he didn't really want to. So at that point, he moves his big unit of 30 Hearthguard Berserkers up. He finishes, I want to say, is somewhere around like 9... 8, it was like you had a plus 1 to charge, right? So about 9 inches from me.
It was 8 inches. Exactly. No, it was literally 8 inches away. I had a plus 1 to charge if I wanted to use it, but I thought a rerollable 8 was just good enough. Because I needed
So he moves that unit up. Strike before you. The only thing that kind of surprised me is when he moved that unit up for the 8-inch rerollable charge, he left 3 of his 5 characters, and arguably like 3 of the most important ones, kind of exposed on the right-hand side of that big unit. I would have expected them to be kind of dead center of that blob to just be really frustrating to get to. And then he failed that 8-inch rerollable charge. What's up?
Sorry. Because of the order of operation of movement, I had to move the Hearthguard Berserker first. I can't like cross, like I can't move the Hearthguard Berserker exactly in a position where I can just like, you know, just assume that the characters move with them. So like because of positioning and the terrain placement we had in the game, I could not, I should have left one back basically for later half the game, but that was my mistake.
Yeah.
And you were able to nuke all three.
Yeah. So, so he failed that 8-inch rerollable charge. Turn goes to me. I took the big unit of Morsar Guard, killed all three characters. And then the next three turns were just me feeding units into that Hearthguard unit, corner tagging it with stuff, just keeping it locked there. And he was chopping through my army really quick with it. But I was kind of free with my other Eel units and the one I had retreated from there. So with my two Eel units to go and score the objectives, while just feeding that big Hearthguard Berserker units. And then I think we ended up 28-25. It was a very close game because towards the end, he was able to clear it and for the last turn score with that unit. But yeah, I think it ended, it was either 28-25 or 25-22, but there was only a 3-point difference.
Yeah, I think there are two mistakes I made outside of like overcommitting like all three characters. I should have just probably left one in the back just in, you know, when the first one, you know, the first two died because I didn't make the charge. Was the other mistake is when our home objective landed, I had like a 10-man berserker unit just sitting on like the objective landing like right where they were positioned, so they would have been fine. And but since you were able to win the activation on turn three, you retreated away from the big Earth Guard unit, which with the Morsar Guards. So I didn't get a chance to like finishing them off, because if I had win initiative on turn three, I would have been able to finish them off and not have to worry about them because they were able to retreat. I knew on turn four, you could come in and charge again on those, you know, Berserkers and basically hopefully wipe them enough of them off to get the objective. So I made like a conscious move to maneuver to try to countercharge them and like hopefully finish them off with that 10-man berserker unit. But then it meant I surrendered that, like that objective was completely exposed. And then on turn four, you won initiative again, and then you just basically retreated from that combat, scored another, you know, 4 points from it. And in retrospect, I was like, you know what? I should have just taken the charge. I had the CP to always strike first. And you had no more mortal wounds to give me with that unit. I would have been able to probably kill them before they got to do anything that mattered. And I just completely blanked. This is obviously, like, by the way, my fifth game playing the new book. And that was a bad mistake. Like, I would have prevented you from scoring 4 points, which would have meant by the end of the game, I would have won by 1 point. So that I think that in retrospect, that was my biggest mistake. Granted, like, the charge on turn two.
Yeah,
was
I think an 8-inch
really
rerollable,
risky.
I think it's like 58. It's like pretty close to a 50-50 shot. It's favored a little bit, but not a lot. Right.
I felt like I had to make it because if I could wipe out that Eel unit or like make it like useless, I wasn't going to have to worry about it because now at this point, like I was in your home territory in the center. Which meant that unit, wherever that home objective, like your home objective landed on turn three, I was in like striking distance of it with that 30-man block. So I was in a position, like, even if I didn't kill them.
Like, yeah. And like Jeremy mentioned, almost kind of lucky for me, since he won priority the first time and took the double turn, I won it the next two turns. So I was able to just alternate us back and forth on turns and never take a double turn for myself, but never give him a second one either. A second double turn from him would have, I mean, usually speaking, if you could double turn twice, you lose. But it definitely, yeah, that definitely would have been like the nail in the coffin there. Luckily for me, he won it turn one. I won it turn three and turn four. And then he won it again turn five, but it was kind of a moot point by then. But yeah.
Yeah, at that point, like, The biggest problem I had is like the chaff wasn't a problem for my army, right? I could kill them. But when you removed the ability for me to double activate that unit of Urgard from Lord of Lodge, I wasn't able to kill them fast enough where like I had a chance to like just literally just reposition on top of your.
So basically the meat then, of like, that game was just me charging units into both sides and tagging like one of his models to keep him locked in combat on both sides. And that's how that entire game went, other than the first turn, pretty much.
Yeah.
So what you're trying to say is, I mean, in order to beat the giant,
you don't
Earth
fight
Guard
it, that's for sure.
Meta you unit, you just got to tear up the sides.
Yeah.
No, you need to kill the heroes, right? And the valuable lesson I learned from that game is, like, I don't need to, like, position right. all three of my heroes when I'm taking a risky charge into, like, charging distance for everything. Honestly, like, you played that game massively. Like, after you made that charge, you're like, you realize, like, I need to play to the objective. I don't need to kill anything in Jeremy's army. Like, if ever I get double turn again, like, that sucks, but, like, I don't have to commit to the field for anything. I know we're running towards unit spotlight, so I'm going to go straight into it because I think it's valuable for everybody here to learn. I play Fly Slayers. I've been playing them for about 6 months, 8 months now before the new book drops. And literally, I honestly think the Lord of the Lodge mechanic with Urkar Berserkers is probably the most broken mechanic they've added.
Now, for our listeners out there, he is talking about the Hearthguard Berserkers for Fire Slayer Battle Tome, and I gotta completely agree with you, not only being on the opposite end of the Hearthguard Berserkers, but just seeing the buffs and the changes that they have, especially their to-hit mechanic. They've gotten so much stronger with a 6-to-hit causing 2 additional mortal wounds, and having that 4-up shrug save is no bullshit.
It's for me, it's one of the biggest problems Fire Slayer had in the previous edition, right, is even though the army was, like, more hordes focused, was the fact that, like, you could get stuck in attrition wars and not being able to win attrition wars to claim your opponent's objectives. What they did to the army now is that it's still just as durable, it has less models, but it hits, like, 200% harder. So effectively what ends up happening is, like, you win attrition wars almost guaranteed. And specifically, not only do you win attrition wars, but you win them early, which means you're able to, like, break yeah. through the enemy line. And
when we played a practice game, I had my 30-man unit of Grimghast Reapers, and with your double activation in combination with both your attacks and which I believe were at, like, -1, and your mortal wound output, I believe you did just around or maybe just a little bit less than 50 mortal wounds before I could do anything back to you.
For that one, there was combat, like, all, yeah, that wasn't the -1 attack. One, it was you -1 attack the broad axes on the other end of the table, and they still killed, like, 17.
Yeah, they did 20 damage, and I saved 17. But I'm talking about the Hearthguard. I think you did, like, 48 mortal wounds to me, or 48 damage to me overall.
That's because, yeah, no, it was that turn where I ended up getting the extra attack rune off. Like, so not only did I get reroll ones, but I also got the extra attack out of it on a 6, which was just, like, if you're engaged with Fire Slayers, when they get that off, it's literally, like, I don't think anything in the game survives that. Like, I just don't think, like, that's physically possible. They get, every model gets an extra attack, and they all reroll ones to hit. And on the unit that does the mortal wound output, it's just bloody, like, insane, because they get to pilot and activate twice, those 3 attacks a model. It's just, no, seriously, Games of the Workshop, if you're listening to this, please raise the points of Hearthguard Berserkers. Like, I don't care how cool people think it is to see Fire Slayers on the table. That combat unit is just literally the dumbest. It's worse than Terra.
I don't like it.
John, have you encountered them before? Have you encountered Fire Slayers? I know that up until recently they weren't super common.
No, I personally have never seen them on the table. But like I said, the words of our immortal producer, I think, covers it all.
I don't like it.
It's all bitch assness in the immortal words of Vincent Morgado.
You know, for a second, I thought that was a president talking, but, you know, China, I guess.
Ooh.
Yeah, the one thing I will say about them is that, you know, a lot of units have the old mortal wound on a 6 mechanic, but 2 mortal wounds on a 6? What the hell?
It's 2 mortal wounds and additional damage. Like, it doesn't stop them from rolling a dice to wound.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Normally, the attack sequence ends also, right?
Yeah. It's ridiculous. They I don't know. Like,
I will say, if these guys become prevalent, there will be some wither stick in my Nurgle army, and that's what we'll be running from now on. But honestly, I haven't seen them in this area, and except the rare occasion when I play against you, hopefully I will.
They
won't
are
have
still
to
an expensive
them.
Army to start financially. You know, when we talk dollars and cents,
but that doesn't stop anybody though.
Stop some, won't stop Jeremy. But
yeah. I mean, you talk about the expense of this hobby. How many of us have three or four armies? Like,
very true.
I was impressed by how many units are actually in the Fire Slayer Battle Tome. I mean, not that I'll ever get to see them on the tabletop, but it's nice to see such a variety there.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for that sarcasm, John. Like, don't get me wrong. I wish Games Workshop gave us, like, another special character, or name character, at the minimum in that book. Like, they literally added no units other than the endless like prayers, and I think in total combination there's probably like six. No, I mean there's more of the heroes, but and on the magma drop, which is exactly the same hero, but on a magma drop, it's in like an actual count, it's like literally like six units in the book.
Yeah, well, it's a great list, and you know that you brought to Riptide, and bringing those Hearthguard Berserkers are again no bullshit. Real quick though. How many points are they, and how much is the maximum squad size?
I don't want to talk about it because it's dumb. But no, it's 120 points for five, which is 10 wounds in total, which is a 6-up shrug. And if it's within 10 inches, thank you, fact, because you didn't clarify it to actually nerf it. It's within 10, not wholly within 10, 10 inches of a hero that's a Fire Slayer. They get +2 to their shrug roll, so it becomes a 4-up shrug. So effectively, it's a 5-up save, 4-up shrug, 2-wound models for 5 models
at
for 130 points.
Wow. Do they get a discount at 20 or 15? When's the discount come in?
The discount comes in at 30. They get a free 5-man unit at 30. So effectively, you pay the price of 25 for 30 models.
which I'm sure you'll do all day long, every day.
Well, just mostly for the Hearthguard Berserker and the Lord of Lodge Battalion, because that's the one that's makes him, I think, a little bit over the top. The double activation is just too nutty, too good to mess up, basically.
Well, you know, hopefully we don't see them too much on the table. I don't know. I personally am dreading having to see more Hearthguard on the opposite side of the table, and you know, Games Workshop doubling down and saying, no, we're okay with this in their FAQ is just kind of bonkers to me.
They know how to sell models is what it comes down to. They say, you know what? These Fire Slayer molds, they have not paid for themselves in about 2 years. We're going to make all our money back in the next 3
months.
You know,
months. It's going to be, you know, we are just a few weeks away from the Bay Area Open. So we might see more than one Fire Slayer player at the Bay Area Open. It is also important to note that the Bay Area Open is going to be a part of the Kublai Khan convention on the final weekend of May. That'll be the May 25th and 26th. There is also going to be a doubles tournament on the 24th that we are eagerly awaiting some extra ticket sales for. So if you guys are interested in the doubles tournament, do feel free to buy yourself a doubles ticket as soon as possible. The AOS GT is going to be a GT, you know, so let's try to make that a major. Anyone who wants to get a few games in the Bay Area a little later this month. In the meantime,
if I tell you guys, if you're on the fence or if you're just waiting to the last minute like gamers do, please pick up your tickets for the BAO, especially if you're interested in that doubles tournament, so that, you know, we just know who's going to be there and how many people we're going to get. Let's do this thing. This is going to be an awesome, awesome tournament. And I may or may not bring a bottle of something special. So if you mention you heard it on the podcast, I may share that with you as well.
Okay. Well, listeners.
He's talking about what he
said. Wait. We're allowed to drink at the venue?
Shh. It's in a hotel.
Be cool, Jeremy. Be cool. Be cool.
I just want the audience to know that. I know.
Hotel. Come on. You know, to give a few other shout outs besides BAO, in June, if anyone is interested, there is going to be a tournament in Las Vegas, Nevada for both 40K and AOS, but let's primarily think about AOS. It's going to be the WHAOSGT tournament for Wasteland Games Weekend. This is going to be the Gold Coast Hotel on Flamingo Road in Las Vegas. So it's not going to be on the strip, but it's going to be just off. I myself am going to try to make it there, and it's going to be run by a lot of great guys. And one other announcement to make for our listeners, the big event that always tops off the ITC season, LVO. You know, it's not going to happen till, you know, the first quarter of 2020, but ticket sales do, you know, are open as of June 1st. So, you know, just at the start of next month, you can get your tickets for all your events as sooner rather than later.
Hey, Alex, I just want to mention a real quick thing. I myself have already bought my LVO tickets, and that's because last year I bought the big high roller package. So if there's any high roller packages left when those go on sale, that's one more reason to go ahead and pick it up, is it lets you get your tickets in early for the next year. So consider that.
Oh, yeah, great point. Yeah, getting those in early is going to be super helpful, especially since you can then sign up early in the future, too. Yeah, so, you know, get those tickets, everyone, and we hope to see you there. This is Alex signing off with John, Matthew, and Jeremy. Brander. Be sure to rate us on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Facebook, or wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great night.
Just checking.
Later.
Later.
Winning is not a sometime thing. It's an all-the-time thing. You don't win once in a while, and you don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit.